You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Half Hour with Jeff and Richie, the podcast where we explore the latest shows we see, sharing our insights and opinions on the performances, storylines, and everything in between.
In today's episode, we take a trip to Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey for a special episode on the new musical Gun and Powder, The Legends of the Sisters Clark. Whether you cannot catch the show in person or you want to expand your thoughts after seeing it, this episode is for you.
And as always, we want to inform you that this episode will contain spoilers. So if you're ready to dive into this production, stick around with us. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie, and we're thrilled to be your hosts for today's episode. So let's start the conversation about Gun and Powder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Half hour.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Half Hour with Jeff and Richie. Today, we're discussing the new musical at Paper Mill Playhouse, Gun and Powder.
Gun and Powder is a new musical inspired by the true story of Mary and Martha Clark, African-American twin sisters who take extraordinary measures to settle their mother's sharecropper debt and save her home. In 1893 Texas, the sisters Clark, passing as white, embark on a remarkable Wild West adventure that examines race, family, and identity with two electrifying women who transform from farm girls to outlaws to legends. The musical features book and lyrics by Angelica Cheri, a real-life descendant of Mary and Martha Clark, music by Ross Baum, and direction by Obie Award winner Stevie Walker-Webb of Ain't No Mo on Broadway.
Yeah, so thanks for sharing all of those details, Richie. So as always, we're going to start with our bold statement about the piece and see how that unfolds into our discussion. I'm going to give my bold statement first about Gun and Powder.
Okay, let's hear it.
This musical has one of the greatest finales of all time, and everyone should experience seeing and hearing this finale.
Oh, yes. So we're going to talk about that because I truly felt moved by that ending. It was wonderful. My bold statement is... it's wonderful to see an regional premiere of a new work that's Broadway bound, I hope, and to think that it's so close and, in my opinion, with a few minor adjustments and edits, could really be successful on the Broadway stage.
Let's unfold there.
Let's go there.
Let's go.
So overall thoughts on plot and concept here. I'll just kind of blanket statement say, I knew nothing going into this. I love this original story. I love that the beginning they say this is mostly true. Like they think they think they know a lot of the story of this, and they're kind of adapting it for the stage in that way. It's refreshing. It's moving. It's compelling. And like I said, there are a few minor things that I would have maybe changed a little bit, and hopefully they'll take some of that into consideration as they're getting feedback from people. Because I always think a production should be living and breathing, and we should be editing and trimming and cleaning and obviously run this at Paper Mill and let those audiences get in there. But when it closes, if it's going to go to Broadway next, let's figure out what we can do to trim it a little. I mean, we were at about 2 hours and 45 minutes, I think. So we could talk a little bit about some of that. But what a story this is, and how it unfolded with the originality of the music and the concept worked and it flowed. And I just felt good.
Well, I think what's really cool about this concept here is this, I believe, started as a thesis for
Angelica
when she was in NYU, and continued to be part of this project for years now, it seems like. But it's based on a story that has been told to her, that has been passed down from generations. And what a cool concept. You always hear these kind of like folk tales told to you by your family, but that this comes from her family's bloodline. It's her great-great-aunt's. And you take that and you say, wow, this is a story that has been told to me, and I think that this could work as a musical. That is creativity. And it's something that is so lacking right now in the Broadway space.
Totally. There's also this like exploration of like fun with like outlaws in the Wild Wild West, which allows for wonderful costume design and some great acting moments and singing. And
I
like that the music wasn't just, oh, this is how music sounded in 1893, so that's what we're... There was this edgy sense of like an ode to the music of that time, but also this modernization of the score really worked for me. And and similar to Moulin Rouge, you're talking about a time period, and then we're taking modern... This is not a pop score. This is an original score in Gunpowder. Right. But there was just some nice, great musical moments throughout. I thought the kinfolk as Greek chorus narrating us through with vocal, and there we talk about narration, but it worked because it was a vocal narration moving us from scenery to scenery. It just really... I would say 9 out of 10 on the songs. I mean, there was one or two songs that was a little iffy on, we'll talk about in a little bit. But other than that, I think it's really working. Nice. Right.
But going back a little bit to the concept as well, you know, the game of telephone is a big play here. How does the game of telephone get the story to you? Mm-hmm. So Angelica has been said that there's been many versions of this legendary tale told to her. And now this is her time of telling this game of telephone in the musical style. Like, what does that mean to you?
Well, that means to me, like, there is a story here about two real people.
Yeah.
And she's going to do service to her family and to those people and tell this story in as best the correct way that she can.
Right.
So she's going to probably, maybe not every single character, every single location was maybe to the T of perfect detail, but I'm sure she has a general understanding of this. And whether she knows if they ever return to the mother or not at the end, she made it important to show that they did, even though one of the sisters did not want to. Did one of the sisters really marry the white man and all that? Maybe. We don't know. You know, I would love to talk to her and say, like, what was true, what was not.
I know.
But it didn't even matter 100% to me, because I was just watching this story unfold and there was nothing. It was like, whoa, what happened there? Whoa, what happened there?
But that's what was also interesting in itself, was I found the story to be really captivating. Mm-hmm. It had those moments of like, this is not something that we know. There's no book about it. There's no movie about it. There's no TV show about it. This is real and raw and something different, which kind of leads into the music here, because you had asked me a question, what do you think about the music? And I said, I feel like the music is really cohesive. Mm-hmm. And it's taking... There was enough of the musical theater elements in here, but they brought in different styles of music, especially from the African-American cultures, of like jazz, soul, R&B, a cappella.
Gospel. Yeah.
But they kept the integrity of the period that we were in, but bringing in these modern sounds, because that continues into pop music into these days. So it almost had like a pop score in the style that it was written, with all of the right elements of musical theater, but took in the actual history of music with these different genres and brought that through.
And if they're using different genres of music, that's great. Then I would have liked in the cabaret scenes to have had a period-esque, jazzy, folky cabaret number that was very like in the style of maybe Cantor and Ebb or something, where
I feel like you had a little bit of that Western.
We did have a little
kind
bit of that
like sideshow.
Yeah. I would have just pushed that a little more. And I'm not saying you need to have tap dancing and all the vaudevillian acts, but what cabaret does really well is they put you into the cabaret act of a number that would have happened at the time in that style. So I would have maybe liked that with the cabaret numbers. There was one in act one and there was one in act two. I would have maybe made those a little less pop and maybe a little more of the like vaudevillian. That's just my personal opinion, you know?
Right. And then one thing I was going to say too here now is I feel that act one is really strong.
It's really strong. It's a little long.
It's a little long because I think there's a few book scenes that can get to the point faster, and that's fine. Editing happens.
Yep.
But the story is strong in act one.
We're left on
a high note, because we're left on a major cliffhanger here that, you know, the future husband here is now shot in the leg. during
and, and that was a great act one ending. I was like, whoa, she really shot him. And when he falls, you really don't know where he shot him, where she shot him. And so you're like, oh, is he dead now? And you don't. And I love going into intermissions, like really not knowing what just happened and having to wait to act two.
Right. So, so great cliffhanger.
Yeah.
We're now opening into act two. And some of the momentum, I feel like, for me, drifted. We went from high elevated Broadway musical to a little bit more of college piece here.
Well, the act two needs to be trimmed up a bit. I actually think there's one or two musical numbers that could just be completely cut. I think the book scenes are a little long. I thought the scene at the top of act two where she's in the bed with him, that whole number didn't really seem to personally be needed. I think we've kind of sped through their relationship so fast. I don't think we need a bad love scene with them per se. I also think the whole like Chase getting the money out of the vault was a little oddly spaced in time. It needed to be tightened up a bit. Maybe they're still getting their footing literally and figuratively with the staging of that.
Well, I think that's great because these kinds of notes here, I think, is what's going to move into the creative team here on this project, because we're touching now on some of the things that it's like, it's almost there. And how do we elevate it?
We'll be right back. Welcome back.
One, in terms of direction, there needs more spacing and staging happening in this piece, because a lot of the times it's stand and sing, a lot of the times it's stand and speak. And I don't know if this necessarily was directed to its best potential.
I agree with that, because I feel like there were so many wonderful elements going on that there was one too many times where the kinfolk like walk on, walk off, walk in the ensemble in general. But there was one time in the very beginning when the white ensemble walks on for the train scene and they're in a silhouette walking in the style. It's very Hello Dolly in Put On Your Sunday Clothes. And it was like in a silhouette. We were ragtime, and that silhouette of that time period is wonderful. If you have people in those costumes, you got to light it and you got to move them in that style that I love. And that was a cool moment. And we didn't see that enough. There was so much on, off, of scenery on, scenery off, on, off. That was like, and I hate to say it, we saw that a lot in Ain't No Mo with Stevie's direction. It was like blackout scene, change lights up, blackout scene. So I'm finding that this needs tightening in the direction of the scene transitions just a little bit, which could truncate this a little bit tighter and move this plot a little bit more. I know we're dealing with a huge stage, but I totally agree, Jeff, that I think that some of this, and speaking of choreo, it was almost at times under choreographed. There was time when the kinfolk were moving, but it was like step touch. Give us some dance with the kinfolk. Give us some... Especially, other than the dance and just the cabaret numbers, give us some dance and stylized movement of the entrances and exits of the kinfolk.
Right, especially because you had those big musical theater numbers, like in the cabaret number, but also in the very beginning, you know, when they're singing Cotton and when they're singing Wide Open Plains, it was really elevated with the choreo.
Yeah.
Really were connected to those ensemble members as well. And I felt like that started to drift, and maybe that's just part of the plot. Like, we're not supposed to focus so much on the ensemble in this piece, but at times you felt like they were underutilized. You had this strong ensemble that you kind of almost wanted to see more, backing up especially both Martha and, oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank now.
Martha and Mary.
Yeah. Right. So I feel like there's definitely some tightening in there. I do feel like his direction has taken a better shift in terms of scene changes from Ain't No Mall, when a lot of the times it was like blackout and okay, we're going to do the scene change now, because I was worried going into this how long the scene changes were going to happen. And I do think that's part of the scenic design by Beowulf. He has created that set to move effortlessly, which to help these scene changes.
Which helps, because then in the big open spaces scenes, like the cotton fields and the big, that works to keep the wide open with the drop in the back. I also did find that for me, like the train scene in the beginning, I sitting on suitcases, I'm like, you know, I don't know, can we get a train out here? We do in Hello Dolly. We've had trains on Music Man. We've had trains on stage before. I just don't understand why. Maybe that's a budget thing. Maybe it'll go to Broadway and they'll put a train in. I know it's only kind of used in that one moment.
Right.
But overall, just little, like I said, these are all little things. I have seen shows before where I've seen major problems and I'm sitting here and saying to myself, there's no real major problems with this. These are just, if I was directing this, putting little tiny, cut this, trim that, add that, move that, like that. And I hope that they will continue to develop it over time.
Yeah, because there were special things, especially the costume design, obviously by Emilia Soso.
Oh, and he's done amazing costume design.
Amazing. I love the costumes. I love the wig, hair, and makeup by Jay Jarrett Tony Laro. It's like they just get it. They're so seasoned in the musical theater space that it just like it looks beautiful.
And another thing I will say, going back to Act Two trimming, to me, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, but I don't know what's going on in that dream sequence.
Yeah.
I don't really know what, I understand what's going on, but it was lit oddly. It was rushed. And then in a way it was rushed and in a way it wasn't, because about 5 minutes in, I feel like it was like a five. I was like, what are we doing here? Like, do we need this? Is she, is she realizing as the character?
The concept of it is smart.
Yeah.
You know, I do think bringing in a dream sequence is always fine if it's executed well. I don't think this was executed that well. And I really think that's coming down to the lighting, in my opinion, that it was very messy when it came to this, because you were like, right, you're saying, what's happening here? Why is it happening? But it was to remind her of her family's history.
No,
so I get it. That's fine. But I couldn't see anyone on the stage she was spotlit, but everyone else, it just felt too dark.
And it didn't finished. They needed to almost work on it more.
But you felt like you were missing what was actually happening. What were they trying to say to her?
Yeah.
And you didn't get that.
And when you put that in middle of Act Two, it looks like it's filler. And it looks like we're
should be a big, important number, because it then foreshadows what's going to happen later and how she comes back to her family. It's a big deal, you know? And getting to the cast now, there are a lot of very talented people up on that stage.
Well, I'm going to say something. One character we haven't really... Well, let's start with Tallulah Clark, who's played by Jeanette Baerdal.
Superstar.
The mother, she's done so much. You can tell she's a seasoned performer up there. Yeah. Jeanette is brilliant in the vocal. And one thing I loved about the writing and the direction was the interstitial moments of bringing the mother in a ghostly way, reminding those sisters that she's waiting at home, mm-hmm. and bringing her in that blue lighting. That was wonderful. And I thought very well done. And Jeanette is, especially at the end, she is like crying through her belting and just holding her daughter's hands. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm feeling everything for her. There is a Tony nomination potential for her like I've never seen before.
When it goes to Broadway.
Yes.
And she needs to go to Broadway.
Yes.
She's literally the star of the piece for me, especially in that finale. Mm-hmm. It's like all of the buildup that you got from her. She is the biggest character arc, I think, in the overall piece, from beginning to end here into this scene. I mean, it is screaming. Like, obviously, she has played Celie in The Color Purple, and it has every right intention of that in this finale. But there's something about this finale, bringing in the different styles of music, gospel style, a cappella style. It is standing ovation worthy, middle of song.
Oh, yeah. People were. And I knew it was the finale, but people were still up before the song was over.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Also, I think Sierra Renee and I think Lise LaFontaine as the sisters are great. They're doing wonderful things. I think they're both playing them so different, and yet they each have their vocal moments. I mean, I just think Sierra sings very well. And I love her song in Act One when she's proposed to. I just loved that. And there's a few songs I'm going to mention that I really loved. That one really stood out to me as a nice moment. It was well lit. It was well designed. I like how he was frozen there with the ring while she sang. I love moments like that. I think it totally works.
Well, for them, what was also great too is like they had an interesting dynamic, because their solo stuff kind of separated them as twins. Mm-hmm. Great moments. I think the only thing that was really missing from me with them was more of that sideshow-esque. When they were together, could they be more powerful together? They had amazing harmonies, but I almost felt like they were missing that one song that really just took them to the next level, like the I Will Never Leave You level of, wow, that was amazing. Because their stuff alone was amazing. Their stuff together didn't always hit the mark for me.
Right. Right. And even in some of their, and that is a little bit of the direction when they were just, at one point in Act Two, they were like fighting and they were just circling each other. Like if I think of any duets from a musical like Les Mis, very rarely am I seeing two people circling each other. Like just have them stand and sing. There's something so powerful about just like stand and sing. It doesn't have to be circling. Right. You know, there was a little moments like that. But yes, I will say that. And I will also say I thought Hunter Parrish had some really nice stuff in there. He's really great.
Let's kind also, of like a typical role. It was like fine. But the comedic relief characters now, I think, are the other stealers.
Before we get to who I think I know you're going to talk about, I want to talk about another person being, I think it was Katie Thompson as Lillian. Was she the cabaret singer? I'm hoping I'm getting that right. She had some great vocal moments. She has two cabaret numbers in this show. I didn't understand where that character fit into the grand scheme of things. I would have liked to have seen a scene with her where we kind of got to know her a little bit. It was almost like she was just the singer and then that was it. I understood the lyrics of what she was singing. I understood that. I just wish I saw, but she sings really great. And in general, I will say with this show, vocals with a capital V, everybody is killing the vocals, the music direction of this, the orchestrations, everything is working very well musically, up to the standards of A Color Purple, A Ragtime, A Les Mis, those epics with all those vocals. It totally sits up there really strong for me.
Capital all letters of vocals.
Yes, yes.
Well, wait, before we get to the comedic, Tiffany Mann is a star.
A star.
And I am so happy anytime I see her name cast in a show because she gives everything that you want in vocals, but she's not just singing a song. She is acting through that song. She's one of not many that can act really well through a song.
Totally.
And she does it.
And she's up there in her moments. I almost wish she had a bigger character. I always feel like we're seeing her in these shows. We're like, give us one more Tiffany moment, you know, but she's really, really
She
really
is
great.
Due to star in a piece. I don't know what it's going to be. She needs to originate a role and star in a piece because she belts like no one else. Yeah. It's like my two biggest belters right now are Tiffany Mann and Bonnie Milligan on Broadway.
Yeah.
They are superstars.
Could you imagine the two of them doing a duet together on Broadway in some way, shape, or form? I mean,
Tiffany Mann, Bonnie Milligan, belt your faces off with each other because you would have everyone gagged.
Yeah. And let's go on to another. We have Sissy and Flo. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Sissy and Flo. When you see the church ladies in The Color Purple, when you see the mothers in Funny Girl, when you see the maids in Mary Poppins, it is a playwriting archetype that works.
It's also a little bit of like in The Music Man, the
Pick-a-Little-Ladies. It always works, Jeff.
Yeah.
It always works to make your comedic relief gossipy, chattery, women or men or whatever, just a little buzzy and a little comedic. It always works because instead of using a narrator, use that. They were catching us up on plot. They were telling us what they were hearing. They got involved like we did. And they sang so well.
Smart writing.
Yep.
And you have two young people writing this story here, and they're taking what has worked in musical theater history and they are putting it into their show. And you have to applaud them for that because they have studied what has worked in the past and they are incorporating that. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing a lot of that. And we're not seeing that, especially from a lot of seasoned people that have been in Broadway for years. So like they're missing those things. And this is not.
And you know, their song Dangerous in Act One is a moment. It's like, give me more of that. And then you see more of them later. And then they're involved in the money stealing and all that, you know, they're just great. They're just so great. Their names are, I must say their names. We have Ariella Williams and Zonya Love. Like, just everything. This is a piece in general that's using playwriting archetypes and stereotypes in a way, but is also making it its own. And that's why my only notes here, not that anyone's really asking for my notes, but my notes are trim up the book a little bit, cut one or two songs, tighten up some of this, add a little choreo, bring some of the intimate scenes down a little bit, but I really think that could go back into a rehearsal room before Broadway and just clean it up a little bit. It's close.
We'll be right back. Let's jump back into things.
I'm not sitting here saying it's ready yet, but I'm also not sitting here saying, oh, they have a lot of work to do. I'm not. I'm sitting here saying this is really close and I'm really enjoying this. And then I do want to just talk about our experience in general because we were at the press opening night. It was wonderful to see so many familiar faces. It is a wonderful place, Paper Mill Playhouse. We never really talked about how wonderful that place is. It's close enough to the city, but it's also far enough from the city that it can be doing its out of town. And when you think about your experience in that theater, watching those people come together in that finale, it is a long finale. It is a well-written finale with key changes and orchestrations. The audience is on its feet before it's even over. You understand exactly what everyone is feeling and the emotions of that piece. And I will say something. When I think of epic finales, and I think of the Les Mis finale, and I think of the Color Purple finale, and I think of some epic, beautiful, huge vocals in my ragtime, I think of these big finales. I say, this is up there. Yeah. I really mean it, that this is up there with some of the greatest finales of musical theater I've ever seen. Truly.
Because it just had, you know, it wasn't a song written about home. It was
That's what I say all the time. Please don't end a show with home. We're always singing about home.
Which it had every way that it could have had about home.
Totally could have.
They go home together.
Because it was about, right.
But no, it was, you know, I don't know how often the book writer and the lyricist are the same person in a musical. I don't know if you would know the statistic on that, or is it
a lot of times?
Is it usual? Mm-hmm. I think what Angelica is doing is really connecting what's happening in the book to what's happening in the lyrics that she is writing. And she has worked really well with Ross in collaborating on those lyrics, making sense with the music styles that need to be there. So it's such a great thing to see two young people really putting those things together.
Totally. And on top of this, I don't remember the exact lyric. It was something like, blood is something. They said it over and over again. I should look it up. But the name of the song is All of Me. And there is where you just put everyone on stage and you stand and you sing your finale. And you don't need to choreograph that or move that anywhere. You just stand there and you simply say, All of Me. And when you think of the end of Les Mis, when I'm just saying Les Mis because that ending is so impactful to me. When he's dying, Cosette's there with Jean Valjean and they're holding, take my hand. Mm-hmm. And then there's the ghost of Fantine. I actually think it's one of the greatest finales of musical theater ever is the Les Mis finale. He's dying. Cosette's holding her father's hand. And there's Fantine appearing at the end. And I'm crying because I'm like so moved. All this was in Gun and Powder was there's the mother holding her daughter's hands, holding the forearm, holding the wrist, grabbing, holding. It's what I miss in so many shows. There is something so powerful about holding someone's hand, holding someone in the end of a show. Ragtime, holding each other. When Brian Stokes Mitchell and Audra McDonald hold each other in that Wheels of a Dream song, and you just hold someone and sing. That's all we need sometimes. Yeah. And it totally worked here at the end.
Right. And with a song like that, you just, it gives you all of the feels.
All the feels.
It completes the story.
And it brings you to the end.
It's like what you want in every musical.
Yeah. Yeah. So truly, truly impressive stuff. And I'm really, really impressed with this. I really hope this has a future to Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
And I really hope that they will do a little bit of cleaning and tightening on some of this. Maybe other people are saying what I'm saying. Maybe not. Regardless, I just hope that some of those notes are taken after this closes in a month and it gets to Broadway next year or whatever. But what a great story.
Yeah.
So just about out of time here, running out of time, as we always do. Final thoughts, Jeff, on Gun and Powder at Paper Mill Playhouse.
I'm really excited to see what happens next with this show. I highly recommend people going and seeing it because I think it's always cool to see something new and fresh and see what its potential is, and then see how that also might change. I don't think we do enough in seeing art early on and then seeing how that changes. It's like watching a pop star grow, seeing them at a small venue and then seeing them at an arena. And right now, this is like seeing a pop star at a small venue before it gets to the arena.
Mm, totally. It's wonderful theater. there's some nice things happening here. The vocal talent and the talent in general is very impressive. And I hope this has a nice future to it. And I felt things. I felt moved. I felt for these characters. And Gun and Powder, that's the way to tell. Take a period piece, modernize it, tell the story. That is important. But make us feel comedy. Make us feel sadness. Make us feel. Make us feel. I felt a lot.
Wonderful. Also, I love the title of the show.
Love it. Didn't know what it meant. Now I totally know what it means, but I didn't, and I don't want to ruin too much, but I know there's spoiler alerts here, but the powdering of, and the gun and all, it just made complete sense to title it that. Loved it. So there we go. Well, that does wrap up our discussion for this episode today. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Gun and Powder at Paper Mill Playhouse. We will share the link with the ticket information in our description here as well.
And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Continue the conversation with us on Instagram and TikTok at Half Hour Podcast, and let us know your thoughts on Gun and Powder.
And if you enjoyed our show, please leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more theater to you. Remember, you can listen to past episodes and stay tuned for upcoming ones as well.
Until next time, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie, saying ta-ta for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.